Jayama. So we are continuing the series on Srimad Bhagavatam, on Canto 6 and toward the end of that canto. We are introduced with the character called Diti. And there are some other characters. Suddenly Kashyap Muni is there. There is a background of the story of Daityas. But that will come in the next canto in detail. So we'll stick to the canto. So it's very fascinating. So basically, in the beginning, there is a little bit of description of how sage Vasishth is born, how sage August is born. And if you read the description, if you read it in a, you know, as I said, if you read it very superficially, it'll sound very strange. And that's also because of the word usage. So let's take some of these things. For example, it is said that from Varuna's semen, which was preserved in a pot, came out Valmiki Rishi. From where? Out of an anthill. It'll sound very absurd if you really look at it. And then from the combined semen of Varuna and Mitra, who saw Urvashi, and therefore that was collected, and out of that there were two pots out of which came. One is Rishi Vasishth, and the other is Rishi Agastya. So if you look at it, it's very strange. Now see, even the language, because basically the word semen is translation of various. That's what we would have heard. But virya in the original spiritual sense means spiritual energy. It's not meant to be the seminal fluid. But in the Western context, there is no understanding of these things. So virya, fall of virya is the spiritual energy which suffers a fall. And there are steps and stages. There is ojas, there is tejas, there is ritas. So ritas is the fluid part. So if you don't understand, so they are like, again, we have another the other day someone was speaking about it. Shiva Lingam. Ling is nothing to do with the phallus, but you will see books on phallus, and then they'll make it even crude, penis. We use the word ling. Ling is pulling, thrilling. Ling is simply, it is differentiating lines of, not even gender actually, gender comes later. So there is the feminine energy which works in a certain way and the masculine energy which works in different way. That's how you are pulling and thrilling. Because it's not about male and female. If you see Sanskrit literature, there are plenty of objects which are classified as pulling and plenty which are as thrilling. Why? Because it's not about any physical object or anything which is evident physically. It's about the way the consciousness works. So it works in two ways. One is the static stable basis, which becomes the masculine. It's the support. So you see, Shivalingam is the stable support. And the around it, the yoni, it is the feminine, which is going around and conceiving things which are coming from there and releasing them into creation. Now, of course, at every level, you will see the same story in some way, including the most physical, grossest form, because that is the original truth. So there is no, the common plan is that there is a stable basis. Sri Aurobindo uses the word passive and dynamic aspect. And that's why the mother used the word that in Shivalingam, that whole thing, you will see the secret of transformation. So people started thinking Shivalingam as it is. When the masculine and the feminine energies come together in a single person, it's not enough to withdraw into meditative state of Brahman, which is away. You cannot talk about transformation then. You have to combine. Where do they combine? They combine as Ishvara and Shakti. As Brahman and Maya, you will see the split beginning. As Purusha and Prakriti, there is a complete split. They are one, but they seem two. So Shivalingam is again basically the coming together of the masculine and feminine poises, if you want to put it, or powers, the stable basis and the consciousness which is dynamic. When they come together, they create. That's why the union of Shiva and Parvati leads rise to Kartike, the warrior god we read about last time, who who is required for killing of certain demons. It is very, very profound, but how it has been trivialized and reduced, and we all believe it unthinkingly. So one of them was this particular story, which if you read that how Vasishtha Rishi was born, so they will use the word the seminal fluid. No, it's the virius, the pure spiritual energy which was taken up and put in Kumbhak. Now that's something which can be understood probably, because you'll see even the birth of Kauravas. The birth of Kauravas is again some kind of a transmission of energy, and it's put probably maybe 100 years down the line. Why I'm saying so? Because Shubhendra says that when you have the secret how energy precipitates into matter, how life becomes matter, then you will have the secret of creating babies without really the sexual process. He speaks about it. And if you look at the story of the Kauravas, 100 Kauravas, they were all kept in certain special, what we may call today as incubators, in which, you know, there was pure energy which was kept together. Similarly, we have many stories. One of them is Rishi Vasishtha and Agast Muni, who were kept in certain, pots where it was the energy of the two gods, Varuna and Mitra. They go together. They are always together. Varuna is the god of vastness and Mitra is the god of love and harmony. In our ashram context, anyone knows who were Varuna and Mitra, on whom they had incarnated? Nalida and Amrita, and they were next to each other. Their rooms were next to each other. And in Nalida, it was the consciousness of Varuna that had incarnated, and in Amrita, it was the Mitra. And they are so different in outward temperament. But they will always go out together, come back together, rooms are just next to each other. So these are very profound occult truths which have been trivialized, as if, you know, it's just talking of some sexual process and some semen being placed in the core, in some kind of kumbhak. So we must understand that it's about energy. Ultimately, it goes down to how energy tends to change into matter. So this is just as an aside, this is just mentioned passingly, in that whole story where the story which we are going to take up mainly is the story of Indra and Maruts. So if you read this story, it will sound, what is it? So the story goes, now coming to the story, Hiranyakashyapu and Hiranyaksh have been slain. So Hiranyaksh is the elder one, he has been slain, both are son of Diti. And we know that Kashyap Rishi has two wives. In fact, he has 13 wives, not two wives. But two of them which are very prominent are Aditi and Diti. And Kashyap Rishi is also very interesting, because Kashyap Rishi is one of these Saptarishis. And based on him, you have at least the name of Kashmir is based on him. Some would say Caspian Sea, but I don't really buy that fully. But definitely. And what was his work? What he did? So obviously we are not talking of the physical plane. So he made the valley, took away the waters and made it possible for life to come up there. So that's the story of Kashyap Rishi, on whom the place Kashmir has been named. That is a whole detailed description available anywhere on the internet. So Kashyap Rishi marries these 13 wives of Daksha Prajapati. And out of these you have Diti and Aditi as the most prominent ones. There is a whole lineage which is described. So out of Aditi, we know that there are 12 Adityas. Adityas are the Devatas. Devatas, they are after the word Deva. So it has two meanings. Those who are givers, and it also comes from the root Dyu, light. So they are children of light, and they are by their very nature givers. And these Adityas, if you go further deep into their whole history, so they are meant to govern this cosmos, because they are from Aditi, means undivided consciousness. So there are two types of consciousness, one which is undivided, infinite. There are many things in it, but they are not divided, either or. So you'll see how the mind thinks. Very often people ask, how can material life and spiritual life go together? This is divided consciousness. How can you lead a worldly life and a spiritual life? Divided consciousness. It'll always look like that. Whereas the undivided consciousness, infinite consciousness, it doesn't look at it like that. That's what we see in the Ishopanishad being described. Vidyancha, vidya is unified consciousness. Avidya is divided consciousness. Vidyancha, again see the word avidya. So where unity is there, but it's gone in the background, you have lost it. So vidyancha, avidyancha, yast dvido vyamsaha. So a yogin is one who, while living this life of manifold activities, which may seem like division, but is joined with vidya, always within him, he has the one consciousness, he has the infinite consciousness, which informs in all these various activities. So, Kashyap Rishi, coming back to him, has two wives. They are all celestial beings. We are not talking of earthly creatures. They are children of Daksha Prajapati, Aditi and Diti. Aditi is infinite, undivided consciousness. Out of her are born the 12 Adityas. Adityas are the celestial beings, the godlike beings who look after. And then out of Diti come first, one of the first Asuras are Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashyap, who had fallen as Jai Vijay. Now we have talked about that story, we will not go back into it. Now very interestingly, if you go into the Vedas or anywhere you pick up, who is the elder? The elder is Asura, children of division. So they, because from the inconscient when they plunge, and that story is very beautifully described in Rig Veda, that as the consciousness started creating, it fell down, it lost contact with the origin. Again, we have talked about this story, so I am saying it in very brief. It fell into the inconscient. Now, from the inconscient, what started emerging? The first forms. They are children of division. So they hold the earth that this is ours. They are the ones who have first entered. They are the ones who have done the hard labor. And then later on, Adityas, children of infinity, children of unity, they come. So the tussle is there, like any other house, that we are the elder, we deserve the everything. And then Adityas come later. And if you see the story, people, that's why they say Vishnu Bhagavan is not being very fair. This question is raised in Bhagavatam. So in the Bhagavatam, there is a question which is raised by one of the sages, that look here, tell me very frankly, is Lord Vishnu really fair? Doesn't use the word Vishnu. He says the Supreme Soul. That's how. So he says, yeah. He says, why are you asking? He says, always he seems to be partial to the devas. So why is he doing it? So now this, in the Bhagavatam, you will see the answer in its own way. But here, Sri Aurobindo has very interestingly answered this question in his own way. And I'll just read that. So always you will see the children of Diti and children of Aditi. You can also understand it as that initially creation, if you want to make an abstract language, this is creation starts with chaos. These, all the different, imagine particles running helter-skelter, they are not together, they are not in a unified order. Now the consciousness of Aditi's children, they put them, streamline them, create order out of chaos. So there is always this tussle going on in everything. So what do Diti's children do? They try to pull back everything. Now, related to human life, you will see some people who are always busy destroying things. And there are some who want to build order and harmony. So this is the tussle which is there in every heart, which is there everywhere, in every being, in the whole creation. And again, these children of Diti also have their own purpose. What do? They destroy the old order, and then the devas have an easier task. Now they come and they, when all this has taken place, things are raised to ground, they have to build things. So this is where the story starts with King Parikshit asking that, because again the story is being told by Sutji, that tell me, is Vishnu really not partial to the gods? Doesn't it seem so? Now in the story it is described very beautifully. It says, no, he's not partial. In fact, the description that is given in the original story, before we come to the Indra and the Maruts. So he says, no, he is not partial. He is equal to all. So then why does he seem to take side of the devas? Because he has killed Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashyap. So then he is told, don't you remember that always when they die, they go straight to the Lord and they get moksha without really doing any tapasya. So tell me whom he is a parcel to. So you see this in Shishupal's story also. He is killed and he merges into Shri Krishna. So he says, yes, so now I have a question, that if their deeds were so horrible, why were they granted a shortcut release? So this is very simple. Because any which way, if you remember the divine, look at the profound truth. All the time, Kansa and Shishupal were preoccupied. In Shishupal's story, right from birth, this fellow is anti-Krishna. And he's always cursing him, abusing him. And there comes a time when he's absorbed into Sri Krishna. He says, this is fantastic. He gets moksha. He doesn't have to do anything. He says, yes, because he was all the time, his mind was occupied with Krishna. There are aphorisms of Sri Aurobindo to that extent. So this is the description that, well, when the Lord comes down and actually kills Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashyap, he is actually liberating them. But why he is liberating them? Then the next question, he says, because they were remembering him all the time. Paradoxically, through enmity. So if you go back to the strict Indian tradition, enmity is vairabhav, is also regarded as one of the forms of bhakti. Of course, not the ideal form or the highest form. Okay, that's very good. There are people who keep on in their state of anger, even curse God. But at least they are connecting to God. There is a very interesting story about it. I have shared this when somebody kept praying about someone that he should be finished to the mother because he was a very bad guy in his view. He's a horrible guy, he should be finished. So he started prospering more and more. So he wrote to the mother, "Mother, why is this happening?" She said, "Yes, because you are connecting him to me." So if he gets connected to me through you, what else you expect? So by any which way, you connect to the divine. Of course, again, enmity is not the best way because then it's not fulfillment. It's annulment. So meaning thereby, a person who actively opposes is better than a person who is totally indifferent. This comes in one of mother's prayers also. That the most difficult people are those who are totally indifferent, who don't care. So even those who are in passions, who are opposing, trying to oppose, at least there is some hope for them. So this is the background of the story. And I'll just read what Sri Aurobindo has taken it up. So as I was saying, that, because Diti's children and Aditi's children, so this is a very nice, I am not going to read the full thing. This is the first essay in one of his writings on the Superman. And he says, what is the difference between the Titan and the gods? And after describing everything, he says, Titan also wants to unify. See, he has his own. He says, why all these different objects bring down to same? Titanic way is everybody will follow the same routine. Everybody will wear the same cloth. Everybody will say the same prayer. He is also trying, because his unity means the inconscient unity. So, says the Titan would unify by devouring, not by harmonizing, which is far more challenging. Put two people together, tell them harmonize, very difficult. But so easy if you put them onto the same routine, same standard thing. He must conquer and trample what is not himself, either out of existence or into subservience, so that his own image may stand out, stamped upon all things and dominating all his environment. Very easily now we can apply at any human level and understand that where is that titanic impulse within us. We don't have to label others, but within us, wherever there is this urge to crush, to destroy, to finish, to make everything like same. So there is the titanic element at work. Wherever you allow freedom, liberty, harmony, there is a person who was telling me about when they saw the mother, darshan of the mother. He says there was a very distinct thing that anybody else you may see and you feel subservient. They were describing the name of a disciple, I won't name. But he said when you met the mother, you felt that you have been released into some vastness. You are your true self. So that's what the divine action is. In nature, since it started from division and egoism, the Titan had to come first. That's why you see Rudra energies come both ways, Varuna come both ways. He is here in us as the elder god. In the Vedic cult, Sura and Asuras are not enemies like that, but they are the two sides of one divine reality. The first ruler of man's heaven and earth. Everybody starts his career as an Asura and is converted into a Deva type by yoga. So it's like we may think we are participating in Devasur Sangram as Deva. No, it starts because egoism is the child of division. Thus the old legend tells us that the Deva and the Asura labored together to churn the ocean of life for the supreme draught of immortality. But once it had been won, Vishnu kept it for the gods and defrauded the fiercer and more violent worker. That's how the story goes. So this is the question of Parikshit. In the Bhagavat, as I said, it's answered in a certain way that, look here, this is also a grace. But how Aurobindo answers it? And this seems unjust. For the Asura has the heavier and less grateful portion of the burden. He's breaking the stones, he's breaking this, breaking that. Now, it's a very heavy task. Building is, you have the master plan, you start putting stones and, you know, it's more of a labor of the mind. He begins and leads. He goes his way, hewing, shaping, planting. The gods follow, amends, concludes, reaps. He prepares fiercely, the Asura, and with anguish against 1,000 obstacles, the force that we shall use. The other enjoys the victory and the delight. And therefore, to the great god Shiva, the stained and stormy Titan is very dear. That's how the story goes. Because he says, okay, I understand. You people have drank the poison. Shiva, who took for himself the fierce, dark and bitter poison, first churned up from the sea of life and left to others the nectar. But, so what is the difference? But the choice that Shiva made with knowledge and from love, the Titans made from darkness and passion. But at one place, Sri Aurobindo says, appreciate the Titan also because he has chosen to drink. You see, sometimes both as a psychiatrist and a spiritual seeker, I feel so sorry when people are full of anger, hate, whom actually they suffer so much more. Of course, they make others suffer, unfortunately. But others can still cut themselves off and say, okay, fine, you live your way. But how much they suffer? So that's the way of the Titan, the Asura. But they do it out of passion, desirous really of something very different, and deceived by their stormy egoism, therefore the award of Vishnu stands. See, this is one of the unanswered questions in the Bhagavad. And people ask, so Sri Aurobindo, obviously he is the avatar, and so that Vishnu aspect is very prominent. So he says, therefore the award of Vishnu stands, to the god shall fall the crown and the immortality, and not unless he divinizes himself to the proud and strenuous Asura. He is not denying. That's why we understand the Rahu Ketu thing. That you prepare yourself. So always we'll see what is the Asura doing. He by force wants to occupy the throne of heaven. This is the mistake. It's not that he cannot claim. That's what we see with Mahishasura and all of them. They're trying to storm into the throne of heaven and occupy it even when they are not ready. This is the background of the Devasura. It'll come several times in the Puranas and the Bhagavad Puran. And now we come back to the story. And as the story goes, the first two elder sons of Diti, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashyap, both are now dead. Dead at the hands of Vishnu. And according to her, because Indra has prompted him. As if, you know, he will listen. So he says, Indra prompted him that, look here, these two are being born and they are going to occupy my throne. They want to kill me. And therefore, Lord Vishnu said, okay. So as we know that he came as the Varaha Avatar. There is a nice movie which was made on that. Varaha Avatar is the one who is the land, you know, is the... So as the fierce Vara, and what was Hiranyaksha trying? He was trying to submerge the Prithvi, the Bhudevi, the earth into waters. Meaning thereby, all possibility of life you finish and you submerge it back into the inconscient. Aprakritim Salilam. So Lord Vishnu goes, brings him up and slays him. Then because Hiranyaksha is dead, his brother Hiranyakashyap, he does a strenuous tapasya, he gets all kinds of powers. Now very interestingly, when Hiranyakashyap is busy gaining power, see, this very beautiful side story of this. He is doing tapasya. His wife Kayadhu, she is a very fine lady. So this idea was that Asura and Deva like strict opposite. Even Indra's, one of the wives is an Asuri. So it was not like untouchables. No, it was, they were stormy, very full of force and fears. So when he is away, so Indra comes, because Indra doesn't come, Narad Muni comes. Indra says, this is very dangerous. In Kayadu's womb now, Hiranyakashipu's son is growing. Now this fellow will come out, and after all, a Daitya, he is going to, he is always thinking of that. So Narad says, don't worry, I'll handle this. So what does Narad do? Actually, I have written in my story on Eternal Feminine, one of them is on Kayadu. This just as an aside. She is the lesser known figure. So he tells beautiful stories to Kayadu. Beautiful story of the Lord, of Vishnu. He's always singing the name. So when Kayadu gives birth to the child, we all know who that child is. That child is Prahlad. And we know the rest, you know. He becomes one of the, he's an Asura by lineage. But he's a great, you know, Deva, and even his grandchild is Bali. So this idea of Asur and Deva is a very delicate thing. Basically, it is intelligence becomes, and character, not intelligence which is characterless, is Deva, and force without intelligence or misusing intelligence becomes the Asura. So this is how it is. So he converts Prahlad. So when the father comes, he says, what is this? In his own house, he tries to change his son, he will not, because his idea was to take revenge from Vishnu. But his own son is Vishnu Bhakt. And we know the rest is history. This is a well-known part that, you know, Prahlad says, you are my dad, it's okay. I respect you for who you are. But you can't say that I am Vishnu. That's not acceptable. And finally, Hiranyakashipu had all the boons, but ultimately, Narsingh Avatar appears and he dies. We'll take that story probably some other time. It's a well-known story. So now ultimately Hiranyakashipu dies. When he dies, Diti is very annoyed. She says, what is this? My plans have been spoiled. Not by Vishnu. Now she blames Indra. He is the one who incited. See, human mind thinks like that. An average mind which is full of passions and jealousy will throw its own emotions on even divine beings. You know, people like how they interpret, like one 17-year-old had come and joined the ashram, very well known. One was Gangadharji and one more person. So some parent went and did a court case that Shurbindo has forced him to come here. He would say, okay, please go ahead and do. In fact, mother advised him, you go back. Come back when you are 18. When you are legally mature. It's a story. So people throw their own emotions onto God. They think that the divine is also acting according to that. So she throws her own feelings onto both. Now onto Indra. Because she has realized that she says, Vishnu will not do it. It's Indra who has gone and twisted everything. So now she wants a son who will destroy Indra. Now this is the background of the story. So what does she do? She goes to Rishi Kashyap. Now Kashyap has several meanings, but one of them is one who drinks away the water. Or he can also live on both land and water. So Kashyap, the tortoise and the turtle. So of course he is now one of the seven rishis. So we come to Kashyap. Rishi. This story is still celestial, as you will see in all the narration. So she does it. So she goes to Rishi Kashyap, says, I want a child who is so great, so powerful. Somewhere he suspects something is wrong. So what does she do? She starts pleasing him. She does everything for his puja, everything in time. So Kashyap, after some time, says, so wonderful. She is so good. So nice. So lesson for everyone. Don't be carried away by external things. But Kashyap is carried away. So he says, okay, tell me, I'm very happy that you have been taking care of me. What do you want? Is there nothing? I just want a child. Oh, that's it. So, okay, fine. But I want a child. I must tell you, put all your energy of tapasya into it. He says, why? I want a child who will destroy Indra. Now he is cautioned. What is this? But he has promised her. So what does he do? He plays a game. It's very interesting, that story. He says, okay, you will have a child who can destroy Indra, who is greater than Indra, I can give you that boon. But it won't be just that I grant you a child and you have a child. For full 1 year, you have to perform a kind of tapasya. Okay, anything to destroy Indra. So that tapasya is still known in, it's not called as tapasya, punar, mas, vrat. If you read some of the stories in Indian thought, you will see that these are the kind of tapasya. So if you have to have a progeny who is very great, so you have to observe strict vegetarianism, not harm anyone. During period, there are certain rituals. During this, many of them come from there. They were never meant for universal rituals for everyone. But this was a game actually. Kashyap Rishi played. What was the game? That if she does all this self-mastery, she will change in her consciousness. This was the whole idea. So he gives her a number of prescriptions. If you read them, they are amazing. She says, okay, I am ready to do all of them. Because now she is one-pointed. When you are one-pointed, you are ready to do anything. You know, there are people who have come here, stayed on the beach. Because they said, we want to see Mother and Shivindo, doesn't matter. We don't get accommodation, doesn't matter. Now, this is the kind of tapasya. She becomes one-pointed. Now, when she's doing tapasya, Indra is feeling very... I'm talking first the raw story, then it's... So, Indra is feeling... Now, I mean, Indra is by the way a status, not a like a person, Indra's change. So, Indra is feeling, I'm threatened now. So, what to do? How to disturb her tapasya? If it was a man, he would have prayed to one of the apsaras. But it's a woman doing tapasya. So what does he do? So he goes and starts serving her. He says, Mother, after all, elder sister's mother, he says, Mother, you're so nice. I want to take care of you. She sees things, he has got a heart change. Both are thinking they have a... But she is having a child to kill him. And he behaves as if he is very nice. So he takes all the things, takes care of her like anything. But what is he waiting? He is waiting for a moment of unconsciousness. This is very interesting. She is waiting when she will be unconscious and I'll spoil her tapasya. Because he cannot spoil otherwise. So one day she is very tired. Now all this is very clearly a story which is a, like a reminder to her how to keep vigilant. You know, when you are engaged in a very severe tapas, a moment of lack of vigilance can be so risky. It's that. So this is a very different kind of tapasya, one-pointed tapasya. So one of the prescriptions was that every night before sleeping you will wash your feet, brush your teeth, nice things. If you have had food, you'll clean your mouth and then nicely after washing your feet, you'll pray and then you'll go to sleep. So one day she is very tired, extremely tired, and she forgets it. Now Indra says, my chance. See, it's an occult story. Where does he enter from? The breath. So he enters in a very subtle form through the breath, goes to the womb. What does he do in the womb? What Indra can do? he splits the fetus into 7 parts. Now if you read the story, look, Ari, what is he doing? Look at what happens. It's clear occult story. So when the fetus is split into 7 parts, each of them starts crying louder. Now he's worried. If they will cry, they, you know, probably she will wake up. So when they start crying, he tells them, Ma Ruda, Ma Ruda. Remember anything with this word? Don't cry. And that's why we have the children who were split into 7 parts. And when they stop crying, he splits them further into further 7 each. 49 parts. And because he called them Maruda, they become Maruts. This is the origin of Maruts. You'll understand the story of Maruti, our Hanumanji, much better with this. So as Maruts, 49 Maruts are born. And they are all radiant. They don't die. So now Indra says, my plan has failed. I wanted one of them to die. Now there are 49 of them. But Kashyap had already, he knew, foresaw it. He said, look here, if you fail in your tapasya, still you will have a child because you are praying to the Lord. But this child will become an ally of Indra, not his enemy. So now all these 49 Maruts, they see Indra there. Oh bro, you're so lovely. They're all happy and Indra is also happy. Now I've got lovely shining herds. And so then Diti says, what is this? This is just the opposite of what I had imagined. So Indra, by then she has done tapasya, so her heart is purified. So she says, but anyways, I am not angry with you. It's okay. You are, after all, my sister's son. Take them together. Keep them nicely. So there is the conversion of Diti which takes place in that story. And this offsprings of Diti become subordinates of Indra. 49 Maruts. They become shining herds of Indra. So now we come back to the deeper sense of the story. So the deeper sense, actually this is a story which is described in the Vedas in a very short way. Vedic stories are like skeleton. They are not going to tell all this in a story format. This is Vedavyasu is saying it. In the Vedas, there are two places where this story will be referred to, but not about all the origin. So as the story goes, that in the Vedas now, in the Veda, Rishi Agastis climbing to the seat of Indra, who is the godhead of the overmind. Total consciousness. And he is climbing with the help of Maruts. He calls the Maruts to help him. Who are the Maruts? The thought god. They are the different thought energies. Brilliant thought energies. So with the help of thoughts he is climbing. Now it's very clear to all of us what it means. So Indra says this is not acceptable. So Agastya says, but they are also god. They are your kind and you are also god. You should allow me to pass. Indra says, not acceptable. You go back. This is not acceptable. You can't just climb by the by just these thoughts, by, you know, like people who read books and intellectualize, or they write books and debate discussions. You cannot. This is not the law. So Agastya feels a little disheartened, comes back, he does the tapasya again. So once again Maruts are called, and now he does the yajna with the Maruts. And all these Maruts become shining. Not just they are not just powers to uplift us, but they are luminous powers. And now once again in Rig Veda you will see these two kolokis. Now again he goes and says, look here, now these are the my thoughts have become now, you know, worthy of coming near you. What do you have to say? Now Indra says, okay, now you can pass. See, it's a story about like how the thoughts need to be purified, channelized, sublimated before you can't do it just by reading books and, you know, thinking about God. You cannot arrive. The thoughts have to become luminous thoughts. And then there you are ready to pass Indra. This is the story in both come with Agastya Rishi. And now we can read a little bit about what does Shobindo speak about it. Very fascinating tales. And then we'll come back to the story and its meaning. Okay. So we have Indra as the global consciousness and Maruts are the thought forces. One more story which is connected. Now we'll understand that better. What was Maruti Nandan doing? Maruti Nandan is Hanuman. He is also one of the Maruts. And he is also one of the Rudras. Because in one of the stories in the Rig Veda, it is Rudra's energy which went into Diti to create the Maruts. So what was Maruti Nandan once trying? To go past to the sun. What does Indra do? Stops him. You can't climb like that. Now see, this story will have such a Rig Vedic connection. You can't climb like that. He said, no, I have to climb, I like it. He said, liking is not enough. So what does he do? He hurts him. Same story, but look at the slight difference. So when Hanuman drops almost unconscious, dead actually in some story, and then he is reborn. What happens when he is reborn? All the gods come and give him their powers. So what has happened now? One Maruti Nandan becomes like 49 Maruts. All the luminous powers come and give him. Does he ever reach the sun? Yes. How he reaches the sun? Later, by the power of tapasya. Same story. Earlier he was doing it by force. Exactly same story. But by force you cannot do that. So Indra stops him on the way. Later on, he does it by tapasya and he goes to the sun god. We have talked about it, that Swarlok and supramental. So basically he says, when I am traveling, that time I can give you knowledge. And there are some conditions. I think we have talked about this story, so we need not go into it. But there are some conditions that how will you gain the knowledge? Sun tells. Sun knows everything, no? All around, supramental consciousness. So he says, I'll be with you. He says, how you'll be with me? He says, tell me, I'll sit with you at your feet. No, you can't sit with me. If you take me as a guru, you can't. He says, it's a puzzle. He says, okay, I'll follow you. I'll go behind the rath. He says, then how can I give knowledge? Because I have to keep turning behind. That's not possible. He says, okay. He says, okay, I'll go ahead of you. He says, how can you go ahead of me? That's not acceptable. It will disturb the cosmic order. So Hanuman comes up with a new idea. He says, I'll be in front of you, but I'll be turned towards you to receive the knowledge. So Hanuman is going backward. And then Surya is very happy. Surya gives him the knowledge. And he also tells him, take care of Sugriv. He is my child. You'll understand, see why in Ramayana, Hanuman is not able to kill Vali. This is something which, at least as a child, I had a question. Hanuman is so powerful. Why doesn't he kill Vali? Who is Vali? Vali is Indra's son. This is the old problem. On earthly play, he is the child of Indra. So Hanuman cannot just kill him like that. He is not allowed. Indra will not let him. That energy of Indra is like that. Indra bows down much later in, again you'll see in Mahabharata all these stories in their own version. When Krishna is there, because Indra challenges Arjun. And when Arjun fights Indra, first time you see that because of Krishna's presence, Indra subordinates himself, because Krishna is of course the Supreme Godhead. So all these stories are all interconnected. They are symbols which are clearly saying something. So what are they saying? These are lovely slokas. I'll not read that. So Rishi Agastya tells Indra, to you I come with this obeisance by the perfect word. See, thought and... I seek right mentality from the swift in the passage. Take delight, O Maruts, in the things of knowledge. Lay aside your wrath, unyoke your steed. So Maruts are the vital powers. So they can climb in speech and thought, or they can completely see. That's why speech has given so much importance. It is the highest power given to man. Unique power. See, animals can't speak. And misuse of speech, mother says, especially when you use not just hurtful words, when you use, she's used a specific word for this, that when you use your speech for, abusive words, then it's like committing spiritual suicide. Why does she say that? Thoughts are the forces given to us to help us in the ascension. Will is the leader, but will cannot climb if the thoughts are not cooperating. So thoughts will help us. If we have wrong thoughts, especially if there is abusive thoughts. See, if you have abusive thoughts, it's like committing spiritual suicide. They'll take you so down. It'll be difficult to rise. So now Rishi Agastya says, O Maruts, take delight in the things of knowledge. See, this is so important. Many people don't understand the significance of Swadhyaya. One of the simplest things, when you read Madhura and Aurobindo, it doesn't matter whether you understand or not. You are priming your thoughts, preparing them for every day one should do Swadhyaya. Even Patanjali says that Swadhyaya is one of the things which makes us prepare. He says, you be full of this knowledge and then you will fly, climb higher. Aurobindo has even used a poem, Thought the Paraclete. And then this is Aurobindo's translation from the Vedas. Lo, the hymn of your affirmation, O Maruts. So Maruts are agreeing. Okay, we'll come along with you. This is the second part. First part, they tried by force. So Indra sent them back. This is not acceptable. Now he has done the tapasya and the mind is ready. Even in Savitri, there comes a line. when he says, I'll drop the mind. He says, drop the mind? How will you reach if you cast the mind into the abyss? Now you understand, the Zen shortcut is a dangerous shortcut. Drop the mind, because you don't need the mind. It's true the divine is beyond the mind. But if you try that, it's a dangerous thing. You have to use the mind, develop it, and then go beyond it. It's like it's given to you with a purpose. So then he says, lo, the hymn of your affirmation, O Maruts, it is fraught with my obeisance. It was framed by the heart. This again, the heart has wings. It must be, it's not just a thought process, but something which is full of love. It was established by the mind, O ye gods. The mantra should spring from the heart. It takes a form in the mind. Approach these my words and embrace them with the mind. For of submission are you the increaser. So they are all, as said, this itself is a big subject. Stutaso na maruto moliyantuto stuto madhva sambhavishtha urdharvana santu komya. So it is very beautiful, hymns to Marut. Affirm, let the Maruts be benign to us, because they can destroy, they are very powerful. You see, don't meddle with the Maruts. They are thought powers. They can lead you, they can destroy you. Be benign to us. Affirm, the Lord of plenitude has become wholly creative of felicity. That Indra will agree. Upward may our desirable delights be uplifted. Maruts, upward. All our days by the will towards victory. So, well, it continues, and it's a long thing. And then Shobindo says, just a little bit, we'll read that also. So it's a sequel to the colloquy of Indra and Agastya. First colloquy we have already, just quickly. So Agastya's hymn of propitiation to the Maruts, whose sacrifice he had interrupted at the bidding of the mightier deity. Now say the same story. Indra says, no, by the just sacrifice of the Maruts you can't come up. So he interrupts that sacrifice. In the Vedas, this is the original story. Less directly, it is connected with thought. The colloquy of Indra and the Maruts, in which the supremacy of the Lord of Heaven, that is Indra, is declared, and these lesser shining hosts are admitted as subordinate powers who impart to men their impulsion towards the high truths which belong to Indra. Giving the energy of your breath to their thoughts of varied light, 49, become in them impellers to the knowledge of my truths. Whensoever the doer becomes active for the work and the intelligence of the thinker creates us in him, O Maruts, move surely toward that illumined seer. Such is the closing word of the colloquy. It's a long, long passage. I'm not touching it now. It's there in Secret of the Vedas, the colloquy of Indra and Agastya. Even if you type, you will get, but Sri Aurobindo has given the meaning of it. You will get it, but as I said, if you just read it like that, many readers that time would have just wondered. Maybe the Vedic truths were lost, but they had to be kept also. Some secrecy had to be around it. So we see that Valmiki in the Ramayana also narrates it. He narrates it with a lovely story. We all have heard. Maruti Nandan is going and, you know, he is so lovely. He is wanting to go to Surya Lok, but he has to cross Indra. You cannot go to supramental without going through over mind. But Maruti wants to do it by force. So Indra stops him. And Indra uses the Vajra. Exactly same process. Even in this story of Diti, he uses the Vajra. So he comes down and he loses all his power. He is dying. Then all the gods give him separate power. So he becomes like 49 Maruts. So if you really count the number 49, it's very interesting. Unchas. We have spoken about it. So 49 is 7 times 7. So all these sevenfold powers, you multiply them with their interconnectedness with each other. So it becomes 7 times 7. That's why the figure 100 comes in the Vedas. Other day, I think in one of the talks we were talking about why 100. So such a special number. So 7 times 7. So 7 planes of existence. Each plane is involved in all the other planes. So it's not like they are disconnected. So 49 is the number of supreme unity. And you add 1 to it, it becomes 50. Now, same 49 upward, 49 downward. Once again, I am repeating. It becomes 98, one above, one below, becomes 100. So that's why 49. So now these maruts, all the different types of knowledge at every plane. So it's an integral knowledge. Indra is the god of the overmind. You just can't tell him, I have been meditating, sir, very long. And see, I've been wearing ochre robes. Please be pleased with him. He won't care. He'll say, okay, you stay in your little ashram and you will get a lot of funds. That's it. But sevenfold, seven knowledge by the thoughts. It means for every plane, there is a spiritual truth hiding in it. In matter, in life energies, all the different. At every plane, there is a spiritual truth. When you have unyoked them. So unyoking the horses. And then they become brilliant and luminous. Normally, we don't look at life like that. Matter is matter. Matter doesn't matter. Mind never mind. Thought forces. By that power, when all these are ready, then Indra says, okay, fine. Come. So this is the story of Diti, where she has tried to have a child because she represents force. She has, poor lady has nothing else. Whereas Aditi is undivided consciousness, intelligence. So she accumulates that force, combines it with the energy of Kashyap Rishi, celestial being, and she creates a being who is so powerful in force that it can dislodge Indra. See, that's why you see Maruti Nandan is so powerful. Ultimate, except for Indra, no? But again, he has got the Surya Siddhant, that knowledge. So he can destroy, nothing stands before him. So that's why you see when Rama comes and nobody can stand before him. So these Maruts, their energy was concentrated in Hanumanji, but here it's all about the raw story. And then they are split by Indra. Actually, is it a curse? It's a blessing. Because otherwise there would have been a fight. So the story is put in a human way. Indra wants to destroy. No. It would have led to a fight where ultimately end result would have been this. These forces which Diti was harboring inside would have just been destroyed. Like Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashyap. What Indra does in the process? He actually changes them into allies. You see, this is a very interesting story where the children of Diti, all her children are Datyas. Children of division. Except for Maruts. And Maruts, though born of Diti, they become allies of Indra and are regarded as some of the gods. And as I said, practical implication is that, well, our thoughts are so important. And mastery over thoughts. If you don't master them, they are like forces. Even if you try to climb with them towards something higher, you will be hit back. You have to purify them, make them into luminous hosts. And if you don't purify them, if they are unruly energies like Rudra, they can completely destroy you. So practical advice, what Buddha gave, what all the teachers gave, before you talk about yoga, realizing God, purify the thoughts, work upon the mind, make it luminous. There are so many processes. Make them ready. Yajna, Agastya Rishi does yajna to just prepare his thoughts. And when these thoughts, which are maruts, now we'll know them, when they are ready, then these very thoughts, which are otherwise people say that my thoughts don't, you know, they obstruct me, I cannot meditate. That's what many people say. They straight away want to master the thoughts. Try doing it. Shobindu is a master of masters. They are maruts, don't forget. But first, you with tapasya make them luminous. Then they themselves will uplift. All the thoughts that will come will be coming and taking us closer and closer. Then when you reach a point, they will get quietened, stop. They will themselves say, okay, our job description is over. And when you get back from that silence, again you will be surrounded by these luminous thoughts. So this is a story of everybody's. Whole yoga is there. And in this story, it only describes, as I said, in the Vedas, you have the raw story. In the Ramayana, you have a very nice tale. We love to watch it. And in the Purana, you have its occult dimension, but with certain occult forces which are involved in the process, Dithi, Aditi. They are at once beings and forces described to us. Jai Ma.